I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Alan Carle. Alan is a best-selling author, an award-winning photographer, a world traveler, adventurer, and an inspirational keynote speaker. With an insatiable passion for travel, culture, people, and food, Alan has explored more than 60 countries, photographing, writing, and blogging about them along the way. Alan has spent nearly 3 years riding around the world alone on a motorcycle. Along the way, he was marched into the Colombian jungle at gunpoint. He crushed his leg in the middle of nowhere in Bolivia and had to beg the governments of Syria and Sudan to let him across their borders. Alan is the principal of World Rider Productions, where he focuses on speaking, publishing, coaching, and creating content that brings to life his stories and experiences around the world, demonstrating again and again how the discoveries he has made and the lessons learned can help all of us lead more rewarding lives. Alan is also the marketing strategist for ClearCloud, a digital marketing and branding consultancy located in Southern California. Alan, welcome to the show.
Excellent. Great to be here, dude.
Now, Alan, I wonder if you could start off by telling us why you decided to go on this journey and what kind of reaction friends and family had to your decision to do this.
Yeah, this isn't just a normal 2-week vacation or a cruise through the Mediterranean.
Far from it.
It was quite different. Often I think in life when we have abrupt changes or just, you know, sudden changes, unexpected in our life, we tend to look at these usually with, I believe, a little bit of scarcity rather than seeing what's good about them. I had come to forks in my road, David. I had realized I was out of a job, unemployed. I had quit the company that I actually had formed. And I was also alone. My marriage of nearly 10 years had ended in divorce. You know, these were definitely big changes. And what I did initially was to do what I always had done. I started another company doing that branding and marketing work. But my passions had always been, since I was in junior high school and probably before, photography and writing, and certainly as I grew older, riding motorcycles. And I felt that at this point in my life, and I love travel too. And you know, I think my dream had always been to do an around the world trip. I don't think I ever thought of it as being on a motorcycle. But when I realized I was at these changes, these forks in the road, and instead of doing what I always did, which I found unfulfilling at the time, I decided to, you know, chase my dream and pursue my passions. And yeah, when I shared this idea and the list of countries, you know, we're not talking going to Italy, Paris, London, you know, we're talking the developing world. When I shared this with friends and families, most thought I was absolutely nuts. In fact, I think many of them were suggesting that I might want to get my affairs together, maybe update my will. And I think others, frankly, took bets. And in fact, I know this. It might have been jokingly, but they took bets wondering whether I'd be either, you know, killed, ripped off, stripped of everything I own, or come down with some horrific disease. And of course, as we're talking here, now, none of that happened, and my friends had more fear about such a trip and a travel than I did.
You know, you've touched on something that I come across with people all the time, which is this internal conflict between pursuing what we're really passionate about in life versus feeling like we should spend our time doing what other people think we should do.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to tell you that, and this journey, inspired me so much. Remember, people always say, "Well, did you feel changed?" And I don't think we actually travel doesn't necessarily change us, but what travel might do is help us realize what is important in our lives. That's, I think, innate in all of us. But sometimes, whether it's a wake-up call or just an experience, you don't have to hop on a bike and travel around the world for 3 years. Whatever that experience is, that kind of will awaken your senses, ignite your spirit to a degree, is something that we all need to do. But I find too often with people that I coach, people that I run into who are enamored and inspired by my travel and my stories, when they'll come up to me and say, God, I wish I could do that. And I look at them, I says, I'm no magical guy here, I don't have bigger cojones or, more things about me that are different than you, because anybody can do this. The hardest part in deciding to choose your passion, follow your dream, is actually that decision point. Doing it is easy. So I kind of laugh and chuckle when I say, well, you can. And of course, there's always excuses. We can always find excuses. I don't have the time. I don't have the money. I don't have a passport. Whatever it happened to be. And these, like all of us, are simply obstacles we're creating in our mind. And I look at that as the old adage is opportunities or possibilities.
So you've touched on something that I think is really fundamental, which is what's going on inside your mind that's preventing you from taking that first step. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how you overcame that hurdle, because it's a big hurdle.
It truly is. It's that decision moment. A point, and I find that we can probably look at people in many, I'm not trying to segment people by personality or whatever, but there are people that find it very easy to make decisions and they're just going to go with their gut and do it. There's other people who I think fall into that analysis paralysis mode, before they make a decision, whatever it happens to be, whether you're buying a new car or deciding, where to take your business to is you want data, constantly looking at data and data and data. And those people get so caught up in that analysis that they never do get to making the decision. Or by the time they make the decision, maybe the opportunity or possibility has passed. And then there are people that just are afraid to make a decision and want someone else to make the decision for them. So if you look at those three kind of decision problem scenarios, identify who you are in that particular case, and look deep inside to say, what is it, if you're the afraid to make the decision, what's holding you back? Or is it consequences or what is it? And if you're the person with the analysis paralysis, it's like, is that just a wall you've created yourself because you are really the number one guy afraid to make the decision? And then the gut guy is where you want to kind of find yourself. And then, Steve Jobs is famous for saying that he did not like focus groups at all. He's like, people don't know really what they want. You have to tell them or show them what you want. And I think that when you're in that mode and you need to make a decision to pursue your dream and go follow your passions, it's a very simple thing. Is you look at the downside and you find you're going to be in that same mode, and maybe you're not exactly miserable, maybe you're not exactly the hamster on the wheel, but maybe you're just not really feeling like you're moving anywhere. You're status quo. And if you realize that the upside of getting outside the status quo is so amazing to find the possibilities and unleash opportunities, that's the process you have to go to. Status quo versus growth and moving and movement. So you can use all those analogies of when you're stagnant, and you're not growing, that is, that's one step to atrophy.
So practicing small changes and being able to deal with them when they don't have such significant impact on your life makes it easier for you to take on a change when it is likely to have a significant impact.
Yeah, exactly. It's a conditioning. I call it change conditioning, and it is just something you need to do. We get into habits, and there's nothing wrong with consistency and habits, but you got to break through those. Same restaurant, same group that you may go out with constantly. You know, if you mix it up, you're more likely to appreciate how change in your environment, change in the things that you're eating, and change in those people that you're surrounding yourself with will open you up, inspire you, and help you get to that point where you can make those, as you say, consequential changes much easier.
Okay, so now let's talk about some of the elements of adversity that you faced, particularly when you were on your journey around the world. And I know from your background, from a few of the things that I mentioned in the introduction, that you had some major challenges. But clearly, now that we're having this discussion sometime afterwards, you overcame them. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about going through and facing those obstacles and what it means to face adversity and how you were able to deal with these challenges when they happened.
Yeah, and these are incredible stories, David. I mean, I'll share with you. I was originally not going to go to the country of Colombia on this trip. When I got to the very bottom of Central America to Panama, I was prepared to put my motorcycle and me on a plane, fly over the country of Colombia, and go directly to Ecuador and begin my South American journey from there. But as I got to the bottom of Central America, I realized that I didn't sell nearly all I owned and packed up that motorcycle to travel around the country to choose the safe route. And I say the safe route because the United States State Department had warned travelers to stay away from Colombia. In fact, they said that if you have to be in Colombia, travel in that country only by air, you know, never by road. Now I'm on a motorcycle. That's not going to work for me. But I got to the bottom of Colombia, and it's one of those decisions that we were talking about. I decided to go. Now I'm 2 weeks or more, I think nearly 3 weeks into my trip of Colombia, and I'm headed towards the border, and I'm stopped by three policemen, and they tell me I'm about to go through the most dangerous part of Colombia, you know, where the FARC and the paramilitary and the drug runners are. And they warn me, don't stop. It's about a four-hour drive to drive straight through. Well, I go, after a couple hours, I haven't seen one car, haven't seen anybody on the side of the road. It's the thick jungle, you know, and each bend of the road, the jungle is getting thicker and the cliffs steeper. And I go through these S-turns into a straightaway, and that's when I see this waterfall tumbling some, you know, 300-400 feet into the river winding below, and it's just awesome. And I know that I've been warned, but I got to stop because I am a photographer and I need a photo. I haven't seen anybody, so I stop. Well, here's where rubber hits the road, I guess, is before I even can get off my motorcycle, I am flanked by two guys with AK-47s wearing jungle fatigues. You know, they order me off the bike, and, you know, I try to explain to them in so many words how beautiful the waterfall is and that I was just here to take a picture. And then one guy tells me, in Spanish, of course, he says, "So you like waterfalls, do you?" And I say, yeah. My heart's beating. I'm shaking. I think this is it. You know, it's done. You know, I've heard all the stories of the kidnappings and the killings in this area. And they say, there's another waterfall you might want to take a picture of in the jungle about a kilometer away. I'm thinking, yeah, right. So, you know, here I am, David, on the side of the road in the most dangerous part of Colombia. Nobody knows I'm here because I'm not going to Colombia, remember. I'm behind on my blog post. And I got on one side of me is my motorcycle. It's my ticket to escape. And but if I try to escape or run, will they shoot? And then on the other side, I got two guys ordering me into the jungle with them. You know, what would you do? Talk about an obstacle. I mean, here I am. I am at another point where I have to make a decision. I've got to either try to talk my way out of this, or I've got to just I've just got to play this thing through. And I look into each of their faces, just like we do when we're in business, when we're dealing and we've got relationships or we're building new relationships. I look at these two guys, not as customers in that sense, but maybe these guys could be my friends. And I look into each of their faces, searching for something that would give me a feeling of comfort. And that's where I talk about, you know, using your gut, your intuition. And I kind of sense something that fills me with a bit of a calming feeling. I'm still scared scared the crap out of me, because I'm now about to agree to go into the jungle with them, leave my motorcycle and everything I own on the side of the road. And we go into the jungle and there's no path. And that's my first indication that I'm probably not going to come out of here, because if there is a waterfall, how come other people haven't taken the path? We have to push big branches from our faces as we get through. And then I lift my camera, because I figure I better take a picture. And the guy in front of me is startled by the sound of the shutter. He turns around and he glares at me and he waves his finger in the no, no, no fashion. And I think, stupid, you know, it's never a good idea to take a picture of a military, even a government building. And in a lot of these countries outside the U.S., you could get your camera confiscated, thrown in jail, or who knows, even worse. And I show him the camera and show him the picture, which isn't very good. And he takes the camera from me, puts it around his neck, and we keep walking. And it seems like for an hour, and I finally come, we finally come to a crystal or clearing in the jungle, and in the middle of it is this crystal clear pool of water. And above it is a waterfall, three tiers, tumbling. It's beautiful. It's just awesome. And the guy with my camera, now he starts taking pictures, dude. And he takes a picture of me, takes the waterfall, takes pictures of Buddy. Then he hands the camera to the other guy. And he asks him to take a picture of both of us. And I've got this picture. It's actually in my book on my website, of me next to the guy with his AK-47, and behind us is this waterfall. And it's at this point, I'm still feeling, okay, things look pretty good here, but they still have the gun, the guns. So I turn to the guy next to me, and I look at the gun, and I say, that's a pretty cool looking gun. Can I check it out? That's right. I ask him if I can hold his gun, and he, to my surprise, puts this gun into my hands and warns me that it's loaded and there's no safety. And I realize at that moment, looking at this gun, that it could have been used to kill me in just a second ago. And then I see that my camera, you know, the other guy is still holding the camera, and I realize that this thing probably costs me more money than both these guys make in a year. So talk about going from being scared, trying to decide what is the move you do. You know, do you try to outrun these guys? Do you, you know, say, hey, nice to see you, wouldn't want to be you, gotta go. Versus, okay, maybe there is a waterfall, and maybe I ought to play this thing through, because the outcome's going to be same no matter what I do. And in that case, I think it's worrying about the outcome that usually prevents us from making the hard decision. And it's listening to your gut and using your intuition and looking into the faces of these people who now I'm entrusting what I believe my life to. And that's where I was able to, you know, essentially follow that path, get through this, what could have possibly, with anyone else, with any maybe different demeanor, different action, could have been disastrous. Part of, I think, in management and preparing yourself for certain outcomes is knowing that you've got to have a continuity plan, a resiliency plan. So these are all cases of you know, you talk about breaking through and solving problems and overcoming obstacles and turning them into opportunities. People, no matter what the media or anyone else will tell you, are really good all over the world, that if you're just open to letting people help you. In this case, I was able to overcome these potentially disastrous and life-changing or life-ending experiences.
So based on your experiences, Are there commonalities that would you say that you would say are themes that we should think about in terms of being able to smash our own plateaus, whatever they are?
Yeah, I do. I'm very passionate about a few things, and the first is about being open. I talked about this before, about just being open. The opposite of open is being closed. I mean, being closed could, you know, the metaphors and the connotation, closed-minded, you know, closed to opportunities, closed to possibilities. You have to be open. And part of being open is trusting. And that's trusting yourself and trusting others. So the first thing I always tell people that ask me, it's like, oh my God, you know, how could have you done this, do this? I says, you know what? I am just open. I mean, when you ride a motorcycle, it's the most open you can be. You're open to the elements. You're open to the road. You've got a lot broader and wider perspective. You see more. You frankly feel more. You hear more. And you even smell more. So just being open to what's around you, to being new experiences and to new people is number one. And to trust yourself and trust others is number two. And finally, I think, well, there's two more, actually, I'll say, that are common themes. And that is the notion of being curious. I tag most of the, every time I sign a book, I always say, stay curious, never stop exploring. Because when we're curious, we tend to ask more questions. And asking questions is so important. You're going to, whether that's, you have to wonder and ask questions why. Some of our listeners may be familiar with, say, the Toyota production system. You know, the five whys, maybe you've heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, instead of just cleaning up the oil on the floor every time with a rag, you know, ask why is there oil on the floor? And I think part of curiosity, you know, particularly as we get older and as our businesses mature, we tend to get stuck in the way that we've done things because we've proven that. Maybe sometimes we're not willing to move. So being curious is asking, why are we doing things in a certain way? Why not the another way? And certainly curiosity is a great companion component to being open. Because, you know, when you're curious, you are open to asking questions and wondering. So those things, I mean, if you'd look at any one of the challenges that I had on my journey, and even the challenges before in terms of trying to decide what to do and how I was going to approach this, you could narrow them down to, number one, being open. That allowed me the ability to make the decision to trust, because everybody may tell you the world's a dangerous place. Well, and don't go to Sudan, don't go to Syria or Colombia. But if you trust yourself and your instincts, you'll know if there's ever a situation you probably should not be, or a place that you shouldn't be. And then if you just keep your eyes open and ask questions to learn, your experience will be so much more fulfilling. And all of this relates to risk-taking, right? I mean, it really does. You know,
yeah, it's true. It does.
It relates to risk-taking. And the only way you can innovate and grow, as we talked about at the beginning, is to take those chances, accept the risk, and also accept the possibility that you might fail.
Alan, wonder if you could talk a little bit about what you're working on now.
Yeah. My journey of 3 years around the world I'll kind of just do a little timeline, turned into another journey of 3 years of also going at something alone, and that is publishing my first book, which chronicles that three-year journey around the world. Now, when I first came about to write this book, I approached traditional publishing agents and publishers, and they loved this idea of a guy unfulfilled in his job, relationships gone wrong, goes out on the world on a healing journey and discovery, and, you know, maybe it's the eat, pray, love for guys, they're thinking. Well, in the middle of this proposal and process of selling my story to publishers, I realized I wanted to make a different book, and that was a book that was more of a coffee table book that would include the photographs that I shared over the world, the faces and the places. And it would also include the food recipes from each of the 35 countries that this one trip entailed on there. When I went back with that idea, David, to the publishers, they all said, now, wait a minute. Hold on, Alan. Stick to the memoir, the travelogue story, because number one, you're not a chef, so forget the food. And photography, we love your pictures. They're great. You put them on a website, put a link in the book, but it's too expensive to publish a book like that. So I decided that these age-old publishers were victim of what we were just talking about, were unwilling to take a chance, could not see the vision, weren't open to a new idea for this type of book. So I decided I'm going to do this myself. So I went about publishing using my skills in marketing and advertising over the years to actually produce a very good book. And then I went to Kickstarter, used crowdfunding to not only validate the concept to see if people would resonate with this book, but also to generate pre-orders for that book. It was wildly successful as an analog book. This is not an e-book. It's not on Kindle. You won't see it on the iBook store. But this is a physical book. It's, you know, you have a visceral reaction when you open it up and you touch the pages. You see these colorful pictures and then that food from all over the world. And I've self-published this. This was my own another journey. And the book is called Forks, A Quest for Culture, Cuisine, and Connection. And as a result of constantly, we're always running into forks, places where we need to make those decisions. Again, coming back to the beginning of the podcast is making the decisions. I've been approached by many people who have been inspired and are interested in this story from a number of different angles. But what's most exciting and what I'm doing right now is literally 2 weeks ago, I packed up my motorcycle, put it into a container, and put it on a boat, and it's headed to Shanghai, China, right now, where in about 3 weeks, I will meet that bike in Shanghai and then travel from border to border, north to south, east to west. It's still being decided, but I'm going to scale and cross the entire country of China and film a new television travel documentary style show. And where the objective of the show is to connect with people, explore and unveil the culture, and find out really what makes people happy, what brings them joy all over the world. And that's it. I'm so excited to be able to continue to take where my book Forks left off, because I couldn't get sound and movement in an analog physical book. But now on television and video and online, I'll be able to share people's stories and hopefully inspire more people to travel, explore, and learn, and also find out what makes them happy.
Every person has ways of having joy and purpose. It doesn't matter what part of the world you're from, what culture you're from. We're all humans. This sounds like a really remarkable upcoming journey.
Yeah. I am so far to say exactly what you said, is that we're all humans. And I tend to think that regardless of whether it's the news or television or movies, one thing I hope that this show can do, and my journey, which I've always, it's always been in the Mac, is to focus on our similarities. What makes us the same? We all find joy and happiness in different things. And also, we all enjoy food and connecting with people and each other. And that's what I hope that I can continue to do on my journey and share with the rest of the world.
Well, I'm looking forward to learning about it as you go through the journey.
Yeah. I will be blogging, and I will be certainly using all the social media that I can, that actually, at least from China, that I can get access to, and sharing this as we're filming this first episode, and then onward.
That's great. Alan, as you have been going through your own personal journey and your career, who has been influential in your progress?
You know, it's a great question, and I and when you first proposed this to me as we started talking about doing this podcast, you know, there's so many people that are inspiring and important to me. You know, from my family, you know, mom and dad to my brother. But you know, I was trying to think, okay, externally now, you know, those people are always important in all of our lives. But you know, as a person, as some of my friends will argue, Alan, you're just a, you know, ADD Renaissance man. You like too many things. You can't, you know, you're focused. You got so many things you do at one moment. I'm doing a TV show. Another moment, I'm consulting on branding for a client. And another way, I'm writing a book. And then I'm riding adventure motorcycle or whatever it happens to be. So there's so many passions and areas that people have influenced me, I guess, is the thing. And one of the, from a writer point of view, and somebody who travels and also gets that notion of the beauty of humanity, is an author. Well known, he's got a great TED talk, by the way, recently. But his name is Pico Ayer. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But you know, I've even developed a friendship over email with Pico, just because as a aspiring travel writer, you know, I had to write to him and share with him that how he's kind of pushed me to step outside my comfort zone in terms of at least writing. And reading Pico's essays, he's written for the New York Times, he's got, you know, probably a dozen books out, it's been really inspiring. And then, you know, there's the marketing side of me that, you know, when I mean, I go back many years. In fact, I shared on with you in your document is, you know, an old school marketing legend called Regis McKenna, you know, one of the first really notable technology marketing gurus, you know, well before Seth Godin and others we may know. But currently, you know, there is in right today, another friend of mine, his name is Jay Baer. He's got a book out called Utility. And he is a marketing, branding, social media legend, and really has, I think, some amazing thinking that you know, that parallels, you know, some of my thinking in terms of adventure. But he is really putting it, applying it to people's businesses in real time. And if you don't know Jay Baer, his website's convinceandconvert.com or jbaer, BAER.com. I love what he's doing showing. And one of the key concepts, I think, that if I was to have one takeaway is, you know what? Sometimes we have to stop selling and we have to start giving. And with this idea of giving, and that be consultative selling, if you wish, but, you know, it's a simple concept, but let's wake up and say, you know, in order to really, you know, succeed, you know, we need to stop selling and start giving. And that might mean giving away a little bit of what we hold close to us. And then, you know, finally, I love music. I love writing. I love motorcycles. There's Neil Peart. He's the rock and roll drummer for those, you know, these guys, this band Rush from Canada, a Canadian trio. You know, I believe they've been around 40 years, and it's been the same three guys forever. Probably the oldest band, maybe, because even the Rolling Stones have had changes in their lineup over their 40 or 50 years. But nonetheless, Neil Peart is the lyricist, but he's also a writer. He's written a half a dozen books. He's also ridden a motorcycle across the Americas. He's ridden his bicycle all through Africa. So not only is he you know, a very famous world famous rock and roll drummer, and he's also done a lot of jazz work too, and doing a documentary, I believe, back in the time of Buddy Rich, or some training tapes on Buddy Rich methods. But this guy is really inspiring because he's so diverse. And I think, you know, while I like to look at my story as having all these obstacles, that I've had to face. Well, Neil's book, Ghost Rider, is what inspired me to actually get on my bike, you know, or start looking at possibilities of doing that. And what happened to Neil is really nothing that compared to what has happened to me in these challenges. Because over a period of 1 year, Neil lost his daughter in a car accident, 17-year-old girl, on her way to college, her first away from home. And then later that same year, his wife dies of cancer, arguably, possibly also of a broken heart. And, you know, here is Neil Peart. Arguably, you could say, if you just looked at it superficially, he had everything, fame and fortune. But really, once he lost those two people, he had nothing. And how did he do it? How did he heal? He packed up his life and went on a motorcycle and went on a journey to heal and discover more about himself and to get through that very difficult time in his life.
They're great examples and a great way to end the discussion. Just thinking about what all these people have accomplished. Alan, can you let our listeners know how they can learn more about you?
Yeah, my website is alancarl.com, and it's alancarl.com. I also have a website for the World Rider Productions, which is simply worldrider.com. And Twitter and Instagram are at World Rider, Facebook as well. And finally, you know, my book has a website which gets you really more detail. There's even sample content you can read, and you can see that original Kickstarter video that kind of really inspired the new journey. It's a forks, you know, like we eat with or that we have on our bicycles and motorcycles. Thebook.com, forksthebook.com.
Great. Well, Alan, you've given us so much inspiration today. It's been a real pleasure having you on as a guest. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been best-selling author, award-winning photographer, world traveler, adventurer, and inspirational keynote speaker, Alan Carl. Thank you again, Alan, for joining us.
Thank you for having me, David. This has been fun. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.